Hi, my name's Bonnie Kibbe. I'm an alcoholic. Did they move my microphones where you're not going to be able to hear me? They're tall, you know. I'm short. I'm going to move Tommy's book here. I'm kind of a leaner. I was a crawler when I drank, and today I'm a leaner. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to come out and share with you tonight. It's an honor and it's a privilege to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everyone's been so friendly and so gracious, and everything's been so lovely. Thank you so much. I give you greetings from my home group, Plug in the Jug. If you're in Columbus on a Wednesday night, come on over to Plug in the Jug. We've got homemade goodies. We'll go to any length to get you drunks out there. We have sandwiches after the meeting. At Plug in the Jug, one of our members is one of my babies, Baby Carol. And Baby Carol was a bouncer at Big Larry's Biker Bar when she drank. She's 10 months sober. And if any ladies bring children to Plug in the Jug and they run around and disrupt the meeting, guess who they have to talk to? That's Baby Carol's job. And Baby Carol called me at 6 o'clock this morning to tell me to tell you hello and to tell me she loved me. She set her alarm clock, and that's something for Baby Carol. My sobriety date's November 15th, 1984. I have a sponsor. I use my sponsor. I need my sponsor today as much as I did in the very beginning. Today I can start thinking I know something. I can let up on my spiritual program of action, which is working with others, and rest on my laurels. And I need that sponsor to tell me, Bonnie, you don't know anything. The basics that kept me sober in the very beginning keep me sober today. I get up in the morning and I ask God to let me read what I need to read from my big book. And I make contact with my book. And then I go and pray. I go to 5 to 7 meetings a week. I go because I owe it to Alcoholics Anonymous to be here. I go because I want to be here. I go because I owe it to that new girl that's coming in the rooms that has an attitude just like I had to be here for her. I'm sharing with you what I do today to stay sober. I think it's important that you know that the basics I did in the beginning, I need to do today, only I need to be more thorough today. All I've done since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is show up in rooms just like this, and my God has done the rest. I'd like to ask my God to help me out here tonight. Father, may it be your words I say tonight. May I say just one thing to help one person in this room. Help me to share. Amen. I had my first drink of alcohol when I was 12 years old. Thunderbird wine and Stroh's beer. Top shelf, you know. They had this commercial on the radio about Thunderbird, and it would go, what's the word? Thunderbird, yeah. Every time I lead at an institution, all the inmates know that commercial, and they come up after the meeting and tell me the words to it. I never remember it. Well, I drank that Thunderbird and Stroh's. It was my first drink, my first drunk, and my first blackout. I came to, and it was the next day, and I was in my bed, and my dad was shaking me, demanding to know where I'd been the night before and who I'd been with. I didn't know where I'd been, but I knew who I'd been with. I'd been with my boyfriend, Danny. I called Danny up on the telephone and asked him where we had been. And he told me back on the phone that I had my first sexual experience. Now, you would have thought with things like that happening when I drank Thunderbird and Stroh's, I would have thought about it. Some serious stuff for a 12-year-old. I gave it no thought at all. I grew up in the 60s. Back in the 60s, we girls would carry these purses like overnight bags. I'd go into this carryout up by my house with my overnight bag purse, and the clerk would turn his head to wait on a customer, and a couple bottles of that Thunderbird go into my purse. I'd walk down the alleys with my friends, and we'd drink that Thunderbird. We'd sing songs like Duke of Earl, Cry Baby Cry. Everything was okay. And by the time I'm 15 years old, in 3 short years, I'm having convulsions on a regular basis. I've been suspended from public schools 17 times. Y'all know the school had a bad attitude about me. Later, my parents had a bad attitude about me. And the Columbus Police Department, car number 73, most definitely had a bad attitude about me. When I drank alcohol, I was a liar, a cheat, a thief, and a finger pointer. And when I got sober the 15th of November of 1984 and came to Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a sober, liar, cheat, thief, and finger pointer. When I came to y'all, my dress left a lot to be desired. I wore those kind of jeans you gotta lay down to get zipped, you know? Blouses you could see through, I could see through, everybody could see through. My vocabulary consisted of 4-letter words, and mother ran in between. I told you I was a finger pointer. I'd be taking my sponsor home from a meeting, and I'd say, if that woman stares at me next week, I'm going to punch her out. She said, Bonnie, if you didn't dress like that, maybe people wouldn't stare at you. She said to me, Bonnie, today you want to be a lady. I say, no, I don't think so. I knew I wasn't good enough to be a lady, and I had no idea what a lady was. My sponsor gave me words I could understand. She said, today you got a new playground, new playmates, new playthings. You sober up, you clean up, and you grow up. My sponsor was my power of example for cleaning up and for growing up. I remember I would go to meetings and I would sit directly across from my sponsor. I kind of give her the stare, you know, and I'd stare at her during the meetings. She had these long eyelashes. And when you drank, like I drank, and you get sober, your hands shake so bad that you can't put mascara on. So I would stare at her eyelashes with her mascara. And when I was about 6 months sober, I bought a tube of Maybelline mascara. And I called my sponsor up and I said, Marietta, I got a tube of Maybelline mascara. She said, yeah, so what? It was no big deal to her, but it was a big deal to me. All my life, my mother would say, Bonnie, it's the little things going to make you happy. And I think, no, it's going to be a big car, big house, big bankroll. It's the little things going to make you happy. That mascara made me so happy. I was amazed I could put it on. By the time I'm 15 years old, I'm hanging with a bunch of people in a motorcycle gang. And I'm going to this bar every night and drinking with them. I'm going home and I'm drunk as a skunk and I'm throwing up all over the kitchen floor. I'm reaching into the linen closet, throwing these towels down in this throw up, picking up those towels and throwing them down the basement stairs. When I get up the next day, my mother says, Bonnie, did you see that mess your brother made? I said, I've seen that. That's terrible. I intuitively knew not to accept responsibility for actions I took while drinking. No one had to tell me. It was like built in, you know. I never did anything good. It was always bad, so I didn't have to accept responsibility for it. I just lied compulsively. My dad told me he wanted me to clean my act up, wanted me to come home at a decent hour, quit hanging with those bikers, and go to school. I said, if you don't like the way I do things, I'll get my friends in the gang to take care of you. He didn't appreciate that. So he told me leave home. So at 15, I left home. I remember thinking, look out, world. Here I come. I'm going to conquer the world. Well, we're talking about 30 years ago. And in Columbus, Ohio, 30 years ago, Parsons and Oak was the ghetto. Guess where I conquered the world to? Right down to Parsons and Oak, the ghetto. I got a job at a little restaurant at Spring and High Street in downtown Columbus, and I got an apartment with four ladies. I would get up in the morning and go to work at this restaurant, and at 10 o'clock I would get my break. Well, right across the street from the restaurant was Stone's Grill. So at 10 o'clock I'm running over to Stone's, drinking a couple double vodkas, going back to my job and finishing my shift out, getting off work at 3 o'clock, and going to Stone's and staying until they closed. I wasn't 16 years old yet, and it was real normal living to me. If you didn't drink, I knew you weren't trustworthy. And to share the truth with you tonight, when I drank, if my back was against the wall, I told everything I knew about you. But I would tell you, you can confide in me. I won't tell nobody. I swear to God, I'm Blackfoot Indian, I'll put it in blood. And I'd have been putting a lie in blood. I knew nothing about trust when I came to you all, but I told you I was a finger pointer. So when I came to you, I pointed my finger and said, I have a problem trusting people. And the truth was, I was not trustworthy. These ladies that I live with in this apartment, I don't know who was paying the rent. I could have been the person paying the rent, but I don't remember. Blackouts were acceptable to me from the very beginning. This apartment that we lived in, we had no utensils. We had no food. Had we had food, we had nothing to cook it in. One of us would get a date, and the man would come to pick up his date, and we all four would go. We'd have him take us to nice restaurants, and before the waiter could clear the table at the nice restaurant, I would do his job for him in my overnight bag purse. And that's where we got our dishes. I'd get up in the morning and get ready to go to work, and I'd want a cup of coffee. And I'd turn on that tap water, put a spoon of instant coffee in one of these cups I'd stole, put that cup under the tap water, and I'd have that cup of coffee with that foamy head on it, you know. Normal living to me. I lived down there 2.5 years, and I did whatever was necessary to support my alcoholism. My brother came down to see me one day, and he said, Bonnie, you're going to end up killing someone and going to prison, or they're going to kill you. Why don't you get together with that guy you dated in school? And I said, fine, you tell him come down to see me, and maybe we'll get together. I grew up in a time when the TV shows were family-oriented. If y'all remember back, the shows were like Donna Reed and Father Knows Best, and Donna Reed was married, had a son and a daughter, and when a crisis came up, Donna baked a cake. I knew I was going to be just like Donna. I knew I was going to meet the right man and be okay. What I didn't know was that I would have untreated alcoholism. And if drinking were my only symptom, I'd have been a winner in the county jail and in the workhouse. I guess that's why they give us 12 steps. Well, this guy came down to see me, and we decided we would get married. And I went at home at my parents' house to plan my wedding. And within 3 years, I was married, had a house in the suburb, a son, a daughter, and a collie dog, the all-American family. All my life, I chased happiness in the bottle or in another person. And now I'm expecting my husband to make me happy. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, through the power of example of my sponsor and the steps found in the big book, that my happiness is an inside job, that I don't get it from other people, nor is my sobriety contingent on my dependence on another person. But I'm looking for happiness now in my husband. We were married for 9.5 years. During that time, I got involved in the church. I got involved in the community. I baked bread. I made clothes. At 7 a.m, I would have 2 loaves of bread baked. I can't believe that today. I've got one of those bread machines today. You put all the ingredients in and push a button, and 3 hours later, it's got bread made. It bakes it and everything. And I look back on that when I would get up and bake this bread at 7 a.m, and it's like I'm on a search to find something to fix me inside. I'm involved in all these crafts and everything. My husband and I were out riding a motorcycle one Sunday afternoon in August. Car turned left in front of us. As a result, I came to over at Riverside Hospital in Columbus, and I was paralyzed from the waist down. At Riverside, I became addicted to morphine. I left Riverside after 42 days, and I was in a wheelchair. I had two bags full of medication. I took them home and put them on a shelf above my sink, and I told my mom, bring over Grandpa's cane. And I'd reach up with my grandfather's cane, and I'd tap this bottle into the sink, and I'd pick it up, and it would say, take one every 4 hours. And I knew if it said, take one, I needed three. And that's how I started taking the medication. I'd sit in my wheelchair, and I'd have a Tom Collins in this hand and a bottle of pills in this hand. And I'd listen to Nancy Sinatra sing, these boots are made for walking. I thought, I'm going to walk right out of this marriage. I had a deep resentment towards my husband. I blamed him for this terrible accident we were involved in. One day, my son and daughter are in their bedroom having a fight, and my daughter, Mary Melissa, she started kicking the wall. I got up and ran in to smack them. They screamed, Mommy, you're walking. And that's how I started walking. If I'd have met you in any of the bars up in Columbus, I'd have told you what I told all my barroom buddies. I was too mean to stay in a wheelchair. My husband and I decided to separate, and we filed for divorce. At this time in Columbus, there's a lot of discos opening up. This is my Disco Bonnie stage. I dressed the part. I bought the gold chains, you know. And I'd go to the discos on the weekends, get babysitters for Michael and Mary. Happy hour would come on a Thursday, so I'd go Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Pretty soon, I was gone every single night of the week. The next day, when I would be sober, my children would tell me upsetting things that happened with those babysitters. I'd say, that didn't happen. That was your imagination. You see, I didn't want anything to interfere with my party time. I truly was like the tornado that the book talks about. I roared through people's lives. You know, when I came to Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I said I had hurt no one but me. And to share the truth with you tonight, if I came into contact with you, I probably owe you amends. And hopefully, I will continue working the 12 steps found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I owe you amends, I will make them to you. One night I went to a bar in Reynoldsburg. You know, when the bartender would yell, last call, I would say, give me two. And I'd arrange things in my purse so I could put two drinks in and not spill them. The ride home from Reynoldsburg to Columbus was a two-drinker, you know. I left that bar at closing and went home and got into bed in my kid's bedroom. And I woke up and people were screaming. My son Michael had played with the lighter and caught my house on fire. My daughter Mary Melissa, she was in the flames. My niece, her husband, went into the flames and rescued my daughter. Then he rescued my son and I. See, I was still drunk. I couldn't have saved myself, let alone my two children. If my niece and her husband wouldn't have been there that night, Michael and Mary would have died. That never entered my mind. The only thing that entered my mind was the inconvenience my house being on fire cost me. A couple of days after my place had caught on fire, I'm staying at my girlfriend Barbara's house while the insurance company's evaluating the loss of my home. And we're sitting at her kitchen table, and I said, hey, Barb, I feel like I got a hair on my tongue. Look and see. She looked. She said, Bonnie, your tongue is black. I said, my tongue is black? Let me see a mirror. Well, I looked, and my tongue was black. Barbara called her family doctor. He said, that's the beginning of alcoholic poisoning. Barbara and I discussed it. We decided I needed to brush my tongue 6-8 times a day. I know that sounds crazy. Some days I feel like I was going to brush the skin off my tongue. I didn't get to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for 11 years after black tongue set in. I was rotten from the inside out. As a result of this motorcycle accident, I got a large amount of money. At this time on TV, they had a show called Starsky and Hutch. It was about two policemen, drove a red and white Gran Torino. Guess what I bought with that money? Red and white Gran Torino, just like them two policemen had. I'd drive down the road in that Torino, have a jug of wine between my legs, a bag of dope on the seat, pull up by the police and wave. Thought I was real cool. In the county jail, I was not cool. I was crying so loud in the county, the other inmates were screaming for me to shut up. But you know, when I got out of the county, I told my friends a big war story about how bad I was in the county. You know, when I came to UON, I'd go to discussion meetings, and they would bring up the topic of anger. I would think, that's it. I've been angry all my life. One of my favorite songs was He's a Rebel. Yeah. I rebelled at everything. And today, through working the 12 steps found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I know I wasn't angry at all. I lived my life in self-centered fear. I didn't know that then. I had that red and white Gran Torino 1,500 miles. And I was driving home from a party one night where I had my first experience with ouzo. Some ouzo drinkers out there. Now, it didn't seem to me like I've been drinking that ouzo that long, that I ought to be able to drive. Of course, I never considered the quaaludes I was taking with the ouzo. What I need to share with you now is when I drank alcohol, I thought I had psychic power. Now, I know none of you ladies can relate to this, but I thought I had this psychic power, especially with you men. Thought I could think things like, look at me, look at me. Y'all look. And I bat my eyes at you. Some of you have done this, haven't you? Well, I'd been drinking this ouzo, and I was coming home from this party, and I was headed for a van, and I was thinking move. I probably had a death grip or no grip on my steering wheel. I used to hold my wheel so tight, I'd get cramps in my fingers. Well, I was thinking move. He didn't move. I didn't move. I totaled his new van, my new car, came to over at the hospital, and they're sewing my kneecap up. I said to the nurse, give me something for the pain. She said, honey, you're sedated enough. I thought, she's got an attitude. Thought I better leave town. Cops are going to come and get me and charge me with OMVI. Called the airport and made reservations to go to Florida. Took my son and daughter to Florida with me. And what I remember out of 10 days in Florida, we got to the motel. I said, Michael and Mary, take these ice buckets down and fill up the big ice bucket, the bathtub. They filled the bathtub with ice and I filled it with booze. And that's what I remember out of 10 days in Florida. But I got pictures. I got pictures of SeaWorld and the Wax Museum and Disneyland or Disney World, whichever one's in Florida. I don't remember. I never knew a blackout was when your body kept functioning and your mind quit recording. I'm sure it wouldn't have made a darn bit of difference. I know I went down every road, every detour, and every alley necessary for me to be right here with you all tonight. I came back from Florida, and I'd been working at a little restaurant before I went to Florida, and when I came back, I decided I didn't want to work anymore. I don't know if any of y'all can relate to that, but I always felt like somebody was supposed to take care of me. My parents took care of me. My husband took care of me. When I came to you and you told me to get a job, I was shocked. I was just shocked. Well, now I came back from Florida, and I decided I didn't want to work anymore. So I called my employer and told him I quit. And I went downtown, and I got on welfare. And my attitude was, you owed me. I was here. Somebody was supposed to take care of me. And now I'm living on welfare. And I started making my money illegally. In the beginning, I would have a code. I would say, I will never sell this. But then you would need this. And I would say, well, I might as well take their money. Somebody else is going to take their money. But I'll never sell that. But then you would need that. And I would say, well, I might as well take their money. Somebody else is going to take their money. And I would adjust life to suit Bonnie's terms. And you told me to live life on life's terms. But back then, it's Bonnie's world. My house is just like a zoo. I'm leaving town for a weekend because my house is being watched. I'm afraid to use the telephone because my phone is tapped. It was an insane way to bring up my two children. But you know, had you said to me at that very time, are you a good mom? I would have said yes. And I would have believed it in my heart. I'd have taken you into Michael and Mary's bedrooms. I'd have showed you their TV, their stereo, their toys. I thought things made me a good mom. I thought buying things was how I showed love. You told me I had it all mixed up. You told me to take the consistency that I learned in coming to meetings and calling my sponsor, praying and reading my book, take it home with me every day. And if I tell my children, I'll meet you at 2 o'clock on Saturday, to be there at 2 o'clock. But back then, I had it all mixed up. When I was 16, I had an idea in my head of what a perfect mate for me was. Was someone good-looking, good education, little money in the bank. By this time, my idea of a perfect mate for me is someone who likes to party just like I do. I met my perfect mate, Jay. Trouble is, Jay liked to throw up and lay in it just like I did. And he liked to urinate just like I did in the bed. And those are things you don't tell each other when you first meet. You kind of slide into them, you know. Jay and I had our first date. We went to Lawson's. I think they're called Dairy Mart now. It's like a convenience store. We got a bottle of Boone's Farm, sat in the parking lot, drank that Boone's Farm, and snorted cocaine. I thought, this is my kind of man. I'm in love. Well, Jay and I started dating. Then we started living together. I'm coming to over here in my family room. Jay's over there. And there's throw up in the middle. I'm saying Jay did it, and he's saying I did it. I'm coming to, and there's urine in my bed. I'm saying Jay did it, and he's saying I did it. I'm hiding my bottles from Jay. I'm getting up the next day, and I can't remember where I hid them. Thought I need to take notes. I'd write down where I hid my bottles, get up the next day, get my notepad out, and couldn't read my writing. Like playing treasure hunt every day. Throwing stuff out of cabinets, out of drawers. My son Michael was 12 years old at this time, and he said, Mom, I'm leaving. I'm going to grandmother's to live. This place is just like a zoo. I said, good, when you're gone, maybe everything will be okay. And now I'm blaming Michael. I blamed everyone and everything but me and the actions I took. My daughter, Mary Melissa, she became the mom. She did the cooking, the cleaning, the laundry. Anything that got done around the house, she did. When I drank alcohol, I was a different person than I am today. Today, through the grace of my God and the guidance of people in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book and the 12 steps therein, I am not the person I was when I drank. When I drank alcohol, I had a philosophy I learned out on those streets. It was, if you were a man, I wanted your money. If you was a woman, I wanted your man. I'm not going to stand at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and act like I got here because I was dishing up soup at the mission. I wasn't dishing up no soup at no mission. I did a lot of bad things. Well, Jay got a letter from his parents. He had a very large inheritance. I just shared with you, if you was a man, I wanted your money. And I wanted his money. I decided we would get married. Well, Jay and I got married, and I got pictures, because I don't remember that either. And we were married just a couple weeks, as best I can remember today. And he got this letter from his parents that they had invested his entire inheritance. He didn't get one dime. And thank God he didn't. Had we had any money more, I might not have made it to you all. Well, Jay and I were married, as best I can remember today, maybe 4 months. And I got up and came downstairs into the kitchen. And Jay's laying on the kitchen floor. He has alcohol, drugs, and paraphernalia on the floor beside him. He has blood coming out his nose and blood coming out his mouth. When you play on the side of the street that I played on, you learn the law. Take care of number one. And my attitude was, I'm not going to jail for him. I cleaned up the mess. Then I called the ambulance. They came and took Jay to the hospital. And he was at the hospital for a short while. And when Jay came home from the hospital, I said, look, Jay, you can't live in this house anymore. You're a bad example for my daughter. You gotta go. And so Jay left. And now there's Mary Melissa and I living in the house. And I'm coming too, and there's urine in my bed. Couldn't hardly believe I'd done that. Knew I must have, but couldn't hardly believe I'd done that. My means of transportation now is crawling and falling. I crawl up to the bathroom and fall down the stairs. You can't crawl downstairs. I have it down to an art. Two stairs crawling, then you're falling. So I'm crawling and falling. My daughter, Mary Melissa's finding me face down in throw up. She's picking me up and cleaning me off and putting me in the bed. I started getting these letters from Jay. And in the letters, he would say, Bonnie, I don't drink or do drugs anymore. I'm in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I dropped the letters on the floor, and I thought, my God, they're brainwashing now, boy. I don't know about your brain. I do know about mine. And it could have used a real thorough washing when I came to y'all. Jay and I no longer had anything in common. I went down and I divorced Jay. I went down and got on a program in Columbus called the Vita Methadone Program. Methadone is given to people that have done IV injections of opiated drugs. I settled for the life of being a registered junkie with the federal government. It was the only way I knew to live. If I was an alcoholic and anything else when I came to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was an alcoholic and an animal. And what I'm going to share with you is the life of an animal. I would get up at 10 o'clock every day and go to the methadone clinic and drink my methadone in front of the nurse there. I would leave the clinic and go home and put on a quilted flowered robe and sit on this love seat in my living room. I'd drink wine on that love seat and take pills and smoke dope. I'd urinate on that love seat and catch myself on fire on that love seat. I'd crawl like a snake into the kitchen for injection. See, I truly was an animal before coming to you. And for a long time after coming to you, I was an animal. An animal in my thinking, and the only reason I wasn't an animal in my actions, I had a sponsor that didn't worry about hurting my feelings, and she gave me clear-cut directions. One day I went to the methadone clinic and I had an automobile accident. The police came and I was charged with OMVI, leaving the curb without safety, and two counts of possession of drugs. I came to in the county jail that morning and had no idea why I was in the county. Had you said to me at that very time, what's the month, what's the year, I couldn't have told you. I remember in the county thinking, what did I do to end up here? See, it wasn't uncommon for me to carry a gun. If you got on my tail, I got out, ran back, put my gun in your face and told you to get off my AWS. And from the county, I thought, did I shoot someone while I was going to the clinic? And I got to thinking about a phone call I'd gotten a couple weeks prior to that. My mother had called me and asked me to please get rid of my guns. My attitude was, why? My guns aren't hurting you. She said, Bonnie, yesterday you had a gun to your head. Mary Melissa took the gun from you. You took the gun from Mary and put it to Mary Melissa's head. You said, Mary, if you move, I'll kill you. I said, Mom, I wouldn't do that to my baby daughter. I love my daughter. And I looked, and my guns were loaded. And I knew if they were loaded, I'd planned on using them. And from the county jail, I thought, did I kill my daughter? I had no idea. They could have came back and said, you murdered 10 people. And I would have had to have believed them. A man came back and told me what my charges were. And my parents had arranged for an attorney and for my bail. I got out of the county jail and went home, and 6 days went by and the Columbus police had time to analyze the drugs I had been picked up with. And they came out and charged me with a felony. And we got to be such good buddies. And in March of 1991, my mom was diagnosed with lung cancer. My mother wasn't a smoker. She watched her diet, walked every day, and she was just devastated that she had lung cancer. During the next 90 days before Mom died, June 26th of 91, she was in and out of the hospital 3 different times. My mother was part Blackfoot Indian, and she had a great fear of hospitals. I hired someone to do my work, and I would go down every morning and be with Mom. Some days, Mom and I would sit there, and we would talk about the first 3 steps, and we would put cancer in there. And I would tell Mom about the Serenity Prayer, and she memorized that prayer to use during the days she had the tests that were so very painful. 7:15 in the evening, Mom would say, "Bonnie, you better get to the meeting. Tell all the babies hello." That's what she called the girls I sponsored. She didn't know a lot of you, but she loved you. She loved you because you were members of Alcoholics Anonymous. You'd taken an animal and turned her into a daughter. My mother was mad at God. And the night my mother died, I had arranged for the funeral home to go and pick up Mom's body at the hospital. And I went home and I was so upset, worried Mom hadn't made peace with her God. And I said, "God, let me read what I need to read in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous." And I opened our book to the page that says, "They had visioned the great reality, their loving and all-powerful creator." And I knew Mom had made peace with God. I know there's power in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know because of my own experience. I was able to be there for my dad. My dad didn't even know how to write a check. And I would go up in the mornings before work and take care of my dad's checking and his grocery shopping and different things. And in October of 1992, I went in on a Thursday morning and I walked from the living room into the family room. And my dad was sitting on the sofa and he was dead. And I know my dad is with my mom now. And they're walking past the big meeting. And they're saying, "Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. You gave us a daughter we never thought we could ever have. I never know how to tell you how grateful I am for the many gifts that you've given me. My daughter, Mary Melissa, that I almost killed many times over. Mary Melissa got married to a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was able to help plan the wedding. I was also able to pay for the wedding." But I was able to watch Mary Melissa walk down the aisle. Yeah. And I was able to be there and be a part of it. And in November of 1991, on Thanksgiving Day, I was at the hospital with Mary Melissa. I was her Lamaze coach. My grandson, Michael William, was born on Thanksgiving Day. When Michael was about 10 minutes old, I thought, "This is like a high I never been on. I'm going to pass out." Then I thought, "This ain't bad." From Stone's Grill and the Methadone Clinic to Lamaze coach, that's not bad. I never know the words to tell you how grateful I am. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and they would read the promises and they would say, "We are going to know a new freedom," I would think, "I won't go to jail. I won't go to jail." And then they would say, "And we're going to know a new happiness." That was beyond me. Happiness? One of my favorite lines in the book is, "Your imagination will be fired." I had no imagination when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I only had conning. I was such a con. And today my imagination has truly been fired, and life has truly taken on new meaning. You know your theme, "We are all in this together." When I seen that today on the program, I thought about the line in the book that says, "Yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing." Yeah. My sponsor, when she would talk at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and she would get ready to close, she would recite the 23rd Psalm. And when she would get to the part that says, "My cup runneth over, truly my cup runneth over." You know, the guy doing the announcements up here tonight, he was better than probably the entertainment tomorrow night, don't y'all think? You were really good. Yeah. I told Tommy, I said, "Thank goodness he's up there doing all this and not you or I. Better him than us." It's really been great. Yeah, it's been an adventure. Every day is a magical adventure. I shared with you about baby Carol, and I have so many other babies. Another baby Carol's out here tonight who moved to Alabama now. Many times I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I hear people talk about spirituality. And in our book, everywhere that it talks about spirituality, it talks about working with others. Yeah. And the gifts that I've received through working with others is beyond my belief. Just beyond my belief. I'd like to thank you all for inviting me to come out here this weekend with you. I'm looking forward to it. I know it's going to be a lot of fun. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me, cling to the thought, in God's hands, the dark past is your greatest possession. And you have allowed me to share with you tonight the greatest possession I have. Thank you all very much.